From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. My dad had a favorite expression he'd say to me when I was a kid. If I had a dime for every time you forgot to take out the trash, I'd be rich. Well, in that same vein, if we all had a dime for when President Trump equated fraud with elections, we'd all be rich. And the president has put that assertion into practice by trying to severely restrict voting rights. Today on the show, we'll talk with our colleague at OPB about a recent ruling from the Supreme Court which thwarts the president's attempt to restrict voting by mail results. And of course, as one of the pioneers to mail-in ballots, that's a big deal for Oregonians. Then, in the last part of the show, you'll meet our newest intern at KLCC. That's next on Oregon on the Record. We've received a lot of decisions by the Supreme Court in the last week, and these decisions will have long-lasting implications. Today, we're going to talk about one in particular, which safeguards an aspect of voting that is near and dear to Oregonians, mail-in ballots. Our colleague at OPB explains. Dirk Vanderhart, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, hey, Michael. Good to be here.
Yeah, you wrote the story about, obviously, there's been a lot of Supreme Court decisions coming out in the last couple of days. We're going to focus on one that they made on Monday about ballots arriving after Election Day. Tell us what SCOTUS did.
Yeah, this was a case out of Mississippi, which has an election law that's very similar to laws that Oregon and Washington and others use. The Mississippi law says that you can vote by mail in Mississippi, and as long as your ballot arrives by mail up to 5 days after the election, if there's a postmark that shows you mailed it by Election Day, you're good. They will count your ballot. Now, in Oregon, we have a slightly different law. As long as your ballot is postmarked by Election Day, they will accept it if it arrives up to a week after the election. But this was focused on Mississippi, and there was a challenge from Republican groups that said, look, 5 days after an election is not Election Day. We need a hard deadline on Election Day, and any ballots that come in later should not be counted. The Supreme Court disagreed. Two of the court's conservatives sided with all three of its liberals and said, no, actually, federal law doesn't make that distinction. And we think that as long as you can show that you mailed your ballot, you cast your vote by Election Day, federal law says nothing about when your vote is actually counted. So that counts. So that is a ruling that folks here in Oregon were really looking toward, were very worried about, actually. And it's one that folks are breathing a sigh of relief about.
Yeah, and given the makeup of the court, 6-3 breaking conservative to liberal, this was a bit of a surprise, wasn't it?
It was, and not just that, but I think I didn't personally watch oral arguments in this case, but folks that did came away from it divining that many of the court's conservatives were skeptical, were asking questions that seemed to indicate that they did not or might not agree about accepting these late ballots. It turns out, though, that, as I said, two of the more conservative members, Chief Justice John Roberts and Justice Amy Coney Barrett, wound up siding with liberals and saying, look, we would be reading too much into the fairly bare bones verbiage of federal law if we suddenly assigned all this new meaning to it, when really, what federal law says is there's an election day, and that election day is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November in even years. We can't say much more than that. If Congress wants to change things, make assign more sideboards or create new restrictions, that's Congress's job. But we are not going to vote or do that ourselves.
Yeah. You pointed out what Republicans had said. I'm wondering, in addition to, we need some sort of a hard deadline, what were some of their other arguments? Obviously, President Trump has been trying to, in many ways, get rid of vote by mail. Talk about some of, their contentions here.
Well, sure. I think what I laid out, I don't understand every bit of this case. What I laid out in terms of the arguments made is largely it for this case. It's Election Day doesn't mean 5 days after Election Day. Election Day means Election Day, and you better have your vote in and counted on Election Day. Mm. Otherwise, what are we even doing? Now, that raised all sorts of concerns about if Election Day is Election Day, well, what does that mean for ballots that come in before an election? That, in many cases, elections officials can begin tabulating or at least processing ahead of an election to help them get results once polls close. What does that mean for that if suddenly we're just saying election day is the end all be all? I mean, there were all sorts of concerns that arose out of this and what might happen if the Supreme Court said no. The other thing that was raised or the caution that some election officials in Oregon had is, well, let's say the Supreme Court ruled that in federal races, so, you know, U.S. Senator, late ballots don't count, but doesn't say anything about state races like the race we're having this year for governor. Mm-hmm. Well, what does that mean in a state like Oregon, where our state law, as it stands, says, well, we accept ballots up to a week after Election Day if they have a valid postmark? You know, suddenly, are we going to be in a position where we have to count late ballots in the case of the governor's race because that's state law? We can't count them in the case of the senator's race because that's federal. And so all of a sudden, the complexity for state elections officials grows potentially very, very worrisome. And they need to create all these new processes before this November election to figure out how to do that. I think that was one of the really big worries we saw. You know, what we heard from elections officials in the run-up to this decision is they were having some very serious conversations trying to lay out their contingency plans for what might need to happen if the court went the other way. Now, here we are, the court didn't go that way. We are status quo. And so now most of that stuff is not necessary in the short term.
Okay. If you're just joining us, we're talking with our colleague up at OPB, Dirk Vanderhart. Talk about what Tobias Reid, Dan Rayfield said. What did our top officials say about this ruling to you?
Yeah, I mean, they have been saying what you would expect. They are both Democrats. They are saying this is a win. This is a win for democracy. You know, Oregonians prize the ability to vote. Democrats in this state have you know, made it a hallmark to try to sort of open up voting to more and more people. That's one of the reasons for this postmark rule, as it's known, is they want to make voting as easy and convenient as possible in this state. And they, you know, there's a reasoning that says, well, as long as you drop your ballot in the mail by election day, that's casting your vote. It's easier for people to remember. That's not quite the way things work, though, anymore, Michael. You know, we have seen in recent years consolidations in the Postal Service. There is now, I believe there used to be two or three different mail processing facilities in the state of Oregon. Now there is just one, which is in Portland. And that means if you are in many parts of Portland, including Eugene, and you mail your ballot, it is going to have to go up to Portland if it's going to get an automatic postmark. Now, voters that are savvy can go into a post office and have them do what is known as hand canceling, which they're sort of postmarking it by hand. Most people won't do that. So the ballot is going to travel to Portland in most cases to get postmarked. And that means that it's not necessarily the case that the day you drop your mail in the mailbox, it's going to get postmarked. It's not even necessarily the case, I suppose, that the next day it might be postmarked. We don't know what can happen when things are in transit. But that has complicated this postmark rule. And one of the things that Tobias Reid said in reacting to this that people should note is that his recommendation is no longer that people use mail at all, frankly. His emphasis is let's use these ballot drop boxes that exist in every county and let's vote early and let's be sure. He says, if you have to vote by mail, I'm paraphrasing, but if you have to vote by mail, do so at least a week out, particularly if you live, you know, outside of around 50 miles from the Portland metro area. And that I think is a reflection of what I'm talking about, where there's only this one postal processing center. And so postmarks can be delayed.
Okay. Do you have any statistics or any kind of numbers around, you know, has late delivery, you know, if for some reason this were to go another way, the Supreme Court ruling, does a lot of late mail, would that have profound impacts on elections or is it not that much?
It's a good question. So. You know, most people we talked to as we prepared for this ruling, and again, I was preparing as I reported for the possibility that late arriving ballots would go away. Most people pointed out that in Oregon, this would not have been that big of a deal. That's for a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, Oregon, many of your listeners will probably know, is it was one of the first, or I believe the first universally vote by mail state. We started doing it for all of our elections, I think in 2000. First ones to do it, real innovators in this field. But that was not the case for this postmark rule, this grace period for late arriving ballots. Actually, Oregon only started accepting those beginning in the 2022 general election. So we have not been doing it very long. The voters of this state have not had like all these different elections to sort of get used to this late arriving ballot rule. Many people probably don't even know that it exists. So that's one thing. We are not a California or a Washington or another state that's been doing this far longer. And maybe it's been sort of baked in to how people are used to voting. And so what we know from the elections, the two, you know, general elections where this has occurred, is that people don't use it all that much. In 2022, the first election that this was allowed, about 1.8% of the ballots that were counted came in after Election Day. In 2024, which obviously was the presidential election, very, very high profile election, fewer than that, 0.6% of the votes tallied statewide came in after Election Day. So, you know, Oregonians are not using this that much. And so it's probably not, you know, may not have been the end of the world. Probably people could have, you know, gotten used to sending in their ballot a little earlier had this gone away.
Okay. And would you remind our listeners, too, very recently there was another ruling that went against the Trump administration regarding voter rolls or proof of that they're designated voters. Can you remind folks about that ruling as well?
Yeah, I mean, we should. There's a lot, as you noted up top, about the Trump administration and trying to sort of curtail or change vote by mail. So there are sort of two things outstanding. One of those is an executive order that Trump issued, I believe in late March or early April.
Okay.
That had to do with who could vote. So Trump wanted to create a stronger role for the United States Postal Service for states that allow vote by mail. And what they essentially said is, states, you need to send the United States Postal Service all your eligible voters, all the people that you are okay, you know, that can vote by mail in your state. And the Postal Service is essentially going to act as a gatekeeper. They are going to only make sure that only those people get delivered mail. You know, that created a lot of concerns among folks in Oregon and other liberal states, particularly about why the federal government wants more of a role. You know, could the USPS be somehow weaponized in some way? Mm-hmm. But more generally, there was an argument that the president doesn't have any role in setting election policy like that. The states are the primary drivers for setting their own election laws. Congress has a role too when it decides to step in, but the president is not granted any authority under the Constitution for that kind of thing. And so that's the ruling we saw last week. A federal judge in Massachusetts said, no, you know, this overextends the president's ability to do that. I'm putting this on ice. The Trump administration is going to appeal that, but you know, that's where things stand right now. So that, you know, is also going to preserve the status quo for Oregon, at least for this upcoming election. The other thing that is going on is the president has been very adamant about passing this law, this bill that he has put forward. It's called the Save America Act. Mm-hmm. And that does a lot. I mean, the big thing that it does would create some very stringent new voter ID standards for people that vote by mail and make things a little more unwieldy to do that. That is caught up in Congress right now. The president has, you know, he's trying to use any leverage he can to get Republicans to take it up and pass it through the Senate, where it's been stalled. But right now, there is not any indication that the votes exist to do that. So that is also held up. It looks like many of the things that President Trump has wanted to do around vote by mail, at least for this upcoming November election, will not go into effect.
Yeah, he's even holding up that major bipartisan housing bill with regard to trying to use that as leverage.
Yeah, very dramatically had scheduled a signing event for this big housing bill that both parties approved and at the last minute canceled it with demands that, you know, Republicans pass his vote by mail bill before he'll consider signing it.
Yeah. Dirk, my last question for you is this. Obviously, the president throws around the F word, meaning fraud, a lot with regard to elections, and he uses it all the time. And of course, does not provide evidence that there is fraud. I just wanted to ask you with regard to when in your talks with people like Tobias Reid and Attorney General Rayfield, I mean, what has Oregon found with regard to any fraud in our voting system going back however far you want to go back in terms of elections?
Yeah, I mean, so look, we should be clear about a couple things. Voting fraud does exist, right? There is, you know, people get prosecuted for it, and it takes several forms. It's not always someone makes a mistake. Sometimes someone is actually trying to abuse the system. But every bit of data we have, and it's not just Tobias Reid or Dan Rayfield, you know, you can talk to conservative groups that are active in this space, and they'll acknowledge every bit of data we have is that it is remote. We just don't have proof that there's anything of this sort of widespread voter fraud that the president has repeatedly, you know, claimed, and that this widespread stuff that might change the course of an election. There just is absolutely no evidence that anything of that sort of scale exists. And so I don't have the figures in front of me, but but what we know about voter fraud, not just in Oregon, but elsewhere, is that it is a very, very minuscule portion of the vote that would not have any role in changing the result of an election. Now, the conspiracy theorists out there, I guess the president is one of them, suggest that there is this undetected, mass fraud that's going on. There's no evidence of it. So I don't know what to say behind that. But like I say, that's what Tobias Reid would tell you, I would expect. That is even what some conservative folks will acknowledge if you begin to talk to them about it.
He's Dirk Vanderhaart, politics reporter for OPB. Dirk, it's always great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Michael. Thanks.
Hannah Bush, our Snowden intern for the summer. Hannah, great to see you. Thanks so much for coming in and chatting.
Thanks for having me. I'm Hannah. As you said, I'm the Snowden intern. I just graduated from the University of Oregon with a bachelor's in journalism, so I'm really excited to be here and learn all I can.
Yeah, that sounds good. Where are you from?
I'm from up in Washington, Napa Vine.
Okay. Where's that close to? Is that like in the middle of the state?
Exactly halfway between Seattle and Portland.
Okay. All right. Okay. So, what got you interested in coming to the U of O?
I toured the U of O, and I really liked the diversity in their programs. Mm-hmm. I thought there were so many different things I could do. I liked the greenery. Oregon's a beautiful state. Mm-hmm. It was still semi-close to home, but I could have my own space to spread my wings and fly, which I really enjoyed.
Nice. And then what got you interested in applying for the Snowden internship and coming here to us at KLCC?
I applied for the Snowden internship. I actually learned about it as like a sophomore in college, but I didn't apply until I was a senior. But it's a pretty notable internship at the U of O. And it's based on a lot of real world experience. You work full time for 10 weeks. You're completely immersed wherever they send you, and that's really appealing. It's great. It's great experience. It's really like just throw you into the deep end of this thing you've learned about and you love, and learn all you can from just doing it. And it's very different from a classroom. And I like the idea of getting to really get my name behind some pieces and get out there in the field.
Okay. Had you done any radio production before you came here?
Absolutely none.
Okay, all right. Well, what interests you about doing a story for the radio?
I wasn't sure how I was going to like it when I first got here, but I've really enjoyed it. I feel like there's a lot you can do, and it's a really interesting way to connect with people that I think a lot of people discredit because they're like, radio's not that popular. But I feel like you can hear your voice. It's very connective to people, and people listen to it in their cars. They download it, listen to it on their phones. Like, podcasts are very popular. It's a very personal way that people ingest their media and their information. So it makes sense that the news being delivered that way can have a really big effect.
Okay. Tell us about the first story you've worked on for us here at KLCC.
My first story was the mattress recycling center here in Eugene, and that was very interesting. I was very excited to get on that. There's a mattress recycling plant here in Eugene through St. Finney's and the Oregon Mattress Recycling Council. I didn't know that was a thing, and I got to learn all about it. Why I like getting to do different stories in journalism is the things you get to learn. I learned about how this last year they recycled, like, what was it, 130,000 mattresses, and just the process of how you don't think of a mattress as recyclable, but all the individual components, once you tear it all apart, actually can be recyclable. And I mean, if you think about how big a mattress is and you think about 130,000, that seems like a lot.
That's a lot of mattresses. Is there a type of story you're interested in doing for us, be it maybe a profile of a person, breaking news, investigative reporting? Is there something that, kind of really piques your interest?
I like a wide variety of topics. I'm really big on, I would love to do some features, community pieces, arts, culture. I like to do pieces on like things that people are passionate about, and whether that be their job or their hobby or a new initiative. Like, what's the human spark behind what makes people tick?
Okay. What has been maybe the most either interesting or unusual or quirky thing that's happened to you since you've been here for about, what, this is your third week, I think?
I didn't realize how awkward it would be listening to myself talk every time I edit.
We all go through that. The voice sounds different in a recording format.
Oh, completely.
And then once you leave here, what do you want to do?
I think at the core of it, I want to learn what I can. I want to constantly be learning. Mm-hmm. I never want to be bored. And I really would like to share what I learn with other people, because I think that transaction of information can really help people make informed decisions. And if the information I learned can help people at all, I feel like that's a worthy cause.
Awesome. She's Hannah Bush, a Snowden intern for us here at KLCC. Hannah, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Oh, thank you.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, you'll meet the new emergency manager for Lane County. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.